ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, folks. Charlie Bazzina here. Join me for my Hunting for Killer show on March 2 at Roombas Function Centre in Gisborne, just 40 minutes north of Melbourne. I'll be taking you on a unique and fascinating journey, outlining my investigations from discovery of a body to some surprising conclusions. This presentation is not to be missed. Tickets available at trybooking.com, and the ticket price includes a pasta meal and a complimentary glass of wine. Limited seats are available. Hope to see you there.
Thanks for listening and being part of my podcast. I hope 2024 is kind to you. In my 27 years as a Victorian policewoman, I investigated everything from a stolen bicycle to a stolen life. Policing taught me a lot about human nature, which I explore in my podcasts with a mixture of interesting and thought-provoking guests discussing the human side and impact of crime on all those involved, including the investigators. And I'd love for you to give me a review if you can. They're just a great help to me. I give my guests the opportunity to tell their story in their own words and how they remember an incident. It may not be how others remember it, which I ask you to please keep in mind. My podcasts are not suitable for children and some adults for that matter. If you find yourself affected by my subject matter, contact Lifeline or any other support service or person you feel comfortable with. Thank you.
If there's anything I can say that might help others in any way, you know, I'll say it because hopefully good can come out of it.
You know, one of the best things about doing my podcast is discovering people who've never thought of sharing their story because, one, they didn't think anyone would be interested. Two, they thought there were others who were doing it tougher than them. Or three, they'd never had the opportunity to tell their story, or they didn't think they had the courage to tell their story. Today's guest, Michael, which isn't his real name, is that person. Michael sent me a brief message after having read an article about me somewhere, and part of his message read, quote, "I want to express my thanks for your work. I can only guess about how hard it was. I write this as an older survivor of childhood abuse confidentially," unquote. Funny how that last word's just been thrown out the window and cast aside by me, confidential. You can trust me, Michael. Your secret's safe with me. I responded and said that if ever he felt like talking about it, that I've found many of my guests who've never told their story before, they find it quite cathartic and their stories often help others in the comfort of knowing that they're not alone. And look, I suppose I can be pretty persuasive. And he finally relented. Michael has such a great attitude considering his father was jailed for offences committed upon him and his siblings, one of which ended their life as a teenager, with Michael never knowing and never wanting to know if they too had been abused by their father. It's no surprise that this abuse had a devastating effect on Michael and his family, with relationships fractured and ruined forever. And Michael said to me in one phone conversation that he was thankful he put his father in jail because, quote, it gave him another 10 years of life, unquote, which he wouldn't have had had he not been incarcerated. And if you don't mind me saying, I just think that's so forgiving, and I don't think there'd be too many others out there as forgiving. So with that introduction, Michael, how are you feeling?
Yeah, I'm fine, Narelle. Yeah, no, I'm feeling fine. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that's good. It's an important story to tell. But as I said before, I don't think you would ever have thought that you'd be doing this. But here we are.
Yeah, no, I appreciate the opportunity, and you know, I'm hoping by sharing that it will help others as well. And you know, I don't see it as my problem. I see it as my father's problem. So you know, talking about it, I think hopefully will help people.
I know it will help people, Michael, because, well, when we look back, it helped you a bit, didn't it? Because you read something and it encouraged you to reach out, whether it to be to me or somebody else, but it sparked something. And I think that's maybe the power of a podcast, the power of talking about it, that it is a connection that you can share with others, and I think it's very courageous of you.
Yeah.
Thank you. So I suppose let's go straight into it. In your own words, can you tell us in as much or little detail as you like about your life as a child and where it all started to go pear-shaped?
Yeah, I was the oldest of four children with two sisters and my brother, who was the youngest sibling. We moved from Melbourne to Sydney when I was about 12 years old. I'm in my 50s now. We moved from Melbourne to Sydney when I was about 12. My father sexually abused me on one of those trips and continued to until I was about 16 years old. I'd also see him in bed with my sisters under blankets when my mother was out, and my mother was out on a weekly basis. My sisters and I talked about around 30 years later, and then we went to the police, with my father then going to jail after 2 years of investigation and a court process. I don't know if he sexually abused my brother, who committed suicide when he was 15 years old, on Mother's Day after she required him to live with my father. I fear my father sexually abused other children and wish we'd gone to the police sooner. I believe he would have sexually assaulted my brother, but I never really wanted to know as, I just didn't want to know out of fear of what I might do next, you know.
To yourself,
or to
Michael,
my father.
Or to your father?
Yeah,
okay.
To my father. Yeah. My father passed away in 2022. My sisters and I have had many psychological issues as adults. It's hard to know if the issues relate to our father's sexual abuse or his neglect. You know, when he wasn't sexually abusing us, he was totally neglectful. Or whether it actually related to some issues related to my mother's emotional abuse. You know, I guess, having one parent who's got significant issues, it's probably no surprise that they're with a partner who had her own issues as well. So, you know, those various issues had impact on us. It's hard to sort of separate out, you know, which issues relate to sexual assault and which ones relate to everything else going on. But there is definitely some issues that do, and I guess I'm going to go into that in a moment. I would say one sister is a single mother with four children, and each child is to a different father. To what extent that relates to our upbringing, I don't know. Another sister ended up in an abusive relationship and she's been in and out of mental health institutions. Myself, I felt worthless and inadequate, treated like an object by our father and then neglected the rest of the time. I'd have to say I'm uncomfortable about sex and at times too focused on sex as well. Yeah, my father overstepped boundaries while a role model to me. And now I overstep boundaries in other ways, which impacts my relationships and jobs. And I'll go into that in a moment. What I'm hoping is I want pedophiles and people struggling with the idea of becoming a pedophile to know it does have an impact and to seek help rather than harm others and commit a crime. I want people to avoid dismissing pedophiles as evil. It's all too convenient and doesn't really cut to the actual issue. I want people to avoid dismissing pedophiles as evil and to instead encourage them to seek help. A good example is that one of the counsellors I've seen has actually had someone come to her who has had thoughts that they regard as about pedophile, being pedophile, but actually hasn't done it. And they were actually coming for help. And, yeah, I'd encourage anyone who's got those thoughts to seek help, and I want to encourage victims to speak out, protect yourself and possibly others. You know, like I say, I do regret not having come forward to the police until 30 years later. But, you know, it could protect others, and it will also help you have closure by going to the police and seeking help.
Did it give you closure, Michael, when you finally did go to the police?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Mm. I think for many years I felt that it had impacts on me. It took me a while to work it out. I did see counsellors. I did go to a men's support group who were also victims of sexual assault. And it took me a while to realise, the various impacts and seeing patterns in my relationships which, would fail, or in my work where I'd sort of speak out. At times I probably shouldn't have spoken out, but, I couldn't speak out as a child. So, as an adult, I sort of go the other way
Can we go back a little bit there, Michael?
Yeah.
When you say that as a child you couldn't speak out, I'm sure that we would all understand the fact that you have taken to adulthood to feel comfortable enough and, let's say, strong enough to report it. But as a child, was there something that stopped you from telling somebody?
I don't really recall wanting to tell someone as a child, and I don't recall whether my father threatened me if I told anyone. It was sort of like our, for want of better words, it was like our dirty little secret. Back then people didn't talk about pedophiles.
Pedophilia.
Mm. You wouldn't see it in the news. You had no context as a child to, And, even after I left home, I didn't go to the police, so I hadn't realised the impacts on me. And also my father was aggressive at other times, not necessarily to me, but definitely to my mother and to my my younger brother. And I feared his response. So it was over 30 years before I went to the police. Back then I didn't know what the police would do, even if I did go to them. And I hadn't considered that he may go on to sexually abuse other children. I also wanted.
But you wouldn't think like that, would you? Because it's so new to you. Like, and because it wasn't discussed, and because you didn't talk about it with anybody, you wouldn't know or understand that often, more times than not, I've found that if somebody is abusing one child. And I'm not just talking about in a family, I'm just talking in general, that there's generally more victims, more survivors. And, I think you're being a bit hard on yourself when you say, you should have done this and you should have done that, because you didn't know. Like as a child, you look up to your parents as like almost gods, don't you? Like whatever they say, you do. So
you don't know. And the other thing is to say, my father was neglecting me, us the rest of the time. So the one time when we felt like we were having any interaction, it was actually when I was being sexually assaulted.
Gee. When you say neglect, Michael, can you explain what you mean by neglect? Like that could mean a myriad of things.
Yeah, I don't recall us ever sitting around as a family having conversations as a kid. My father would be preoccupied with gambling. He was alcoholic. He was always working on his car or working on a building out the back of the place. He never really interacted with us. And I think too, part of it was that my mother was emotionally abusive as well. And I think as a young adult, I wanted to put it, you know, I left home, I wanted to put it behind me. So it's the other reason why you wouldn't talk about it, was just sort of like, you know, wanting to sort of move on and deal
trying
with.
Trying to forget it.
Trying to forget it and yeah. trying to deal with the rest of the world, you know, like, you know, going to university and everything else kept me busy as well. So, yeah. So, but the impacts, there were a wide variety of impacts, which I ended up sort of reading out to my father in court. And again, that court process gave me an opportunity to really, firstly, preparing for the court process made me think about what were the impacts, what is it I wanted to say. And then I was able to, you know, write them down. And I guess there's some of the, I could sort of go through some of those points.
Yes, that I'd love, well, that would be very helpful in a lot of ways to a lot of people. But can we just revert back to when you did report it to the police? So, and we'll probably talk a little bit about in between when you left home and when you did report it to police, because there's a lot of years in between. But what was the catalyst for you reporting it to the police? Because that obviously took a lot of courage, a lot to actually tell somebody.
Yeah, I guess there was a step before that. It was in my early 20s, my first girlfriend. Yeah, as I said, my brother committed suicide when he was 15 and I was 21. You know, my first girlfriend, I was about 22. I started late because, you know, I guess I was messed up as a kid. But after my brother's suicide, I was talking to her about, you know, us having been abused and my fear that my brother might have been abused and my fear about what I might want to do to my father if I found out that he had done that to my brother. And my girlfriend shared that. We're both absolutely, she was shocked and felt similar. You know, that was the sort of first time I'd actually spoken to someone.
How did that feel? How did that feel, Michael, talking, actually telling somebody about that sort of dirt, as you'd refer to it as, your dirty little secret?
Yeah.
Did it feel good to tell her or not?
It felt it removed confusion. It felt like I was finally separating – you know, myself versus my father. You know, my father was a sick person, and you know, as a young adult, being able to, there was some news about pedophiles, and you know, being able to recognise that. And going to the police, you know, over the years, I'd struggled in relationships. I'd struggled with anxiety and depression. Various things I'll talk about, but and my sisters had their own issues too. Yeah, as I mentioned, one sister had four children, four different fathers, single mum, and you know, the other sister in and out of mental health institutions. Yeah, we talked about it, and I guess what happened was I was actually between jobs yet again. I had spare time. I was talking to a sister, and I just thought it was time to do something. You know, it was time to confront our father, who I now felt old enough not to fear him anymore. You know, and I just said, look, how about we just do it? Let's just go to the police. So we went down to the police station, me and one sister, and we talked to our other sister about it. She gave a statement as well. That's, it went from there.
Can tell us about, you said you confronted your father. How did that go? Or was the first time you confronted him in court?
Yeah, it was in court. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Right.
Yeah.
And tell us about going to the police and that process and how you found it.
Yeah. Went to the police and they took statements. It was 30 years later, so they really had to do their work to be able to piece together a case with, you know, not really much evidence other than, yes, me and my two sisters were giving statements. As I mentioned, we moved from Melbourne to Sydney. I suspected there was a girl who lived in our neighborhood was a friend of us as kids. I suspected she might have been assaulted. Because we're in Sydney, we're crossing jurisdictions. The police in New South Wales couldn't do anything, really. I had to, of my own volition, had to go and do land title searches, trying to work out where did she – I knew the house roughly. Yeah, where did she live? What was the family name? I ended up going through the police right up to the Police Commissioner of New South Wales and then across the Police Commissioner of Victoria and then back down for them to actually find this lady and actually ask her if she'd like to give a statement. I won't comment on that further for her own privacy. But that was a bit of a painful exercise, that crossing jurisdictions and getting stuck with that sort of situation. And the other thing was that the police wouldn't actually share much information with us about what they were doing in terms of investigations over the 2 year period. If there was anything I'd say there, it'd be good if they were able to give updates while also respecting the fact that it's an investigation, they can't talk about some things.
I've learned that in my career, in my police career, Michael, that if you just give somebody something, a little bit of information, it's better than nothing. And, in fact, I think I've told this story before, but my sergeant at the rape squad, he would every Monday morning – we'd have to put aside. I mean, obviously, if there was a job going, we had to go to it. But generally, if we had a couple of hours spare, he always wanted or asked, or directed actually, for us all his crew, which was four or five of us detectives, to ring every victim that we were, that they had come and made a complaint, to ring them and give them a bit of an update.
Yeah.
And I learned something very valuable from that because, as you say, you didn't have very much information at all, and it would have just been nice for them to, I don't know, just every couple of weeks say, look, Michael, I can't tell you a lot, but the case is progressing, or just something.
Yeah, yeah. There were other things that happened during that 2 year period. Like our father actually went overseas in the middle of a police investigation. I'd done a bit of research on him. I knew that he was helping, he was part of a group, sort of like a religious group, and part of that was funding an orphanage.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah, and he'd gone overseas, goodness, potentially to that that orphanage in the middle of a police investigation. I was totally flabbergasted. I think the police arrested him as he came back into Australia.
Does that horrify you like it horrifies me?
Yes.
forgetting that the police didn't stop him, all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
The fact that he has gone to and he's involved with an orphanage.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. To me,
and as I say,
that just fills me with dread.
Yeah, and as I yeah, me too. And as I said, it took us 30 years to go to the police, and I wish we'd gone sooner. I can't blame
myself.
All I'm saying to anyone listening is that you're going to get closure for yourself if you go sooner. I mentioned my father, as part of his defence in court. I read forensic psychiatrist reports, and he had brain scans and all that. He was drinking himself to death when he got arrested by the police. He was given about a year to live, The fact that he ended up going to court potentially prolonged his life. He lived another 10 years. So, in a sense, we saved his life in a way. I'd like to think he also had some closure himself. He was a sick person. Part of his treatment was getting proper psychiatric help. He had a son who committed suicide. I'd like to think that my father might have got some closure out of that. At the end of the day, my father was a sick person.
Very sick, very sick. And you're right, in a way, what a shame, that's putting it lightly, that it took him to be incarcerated to actually get some help, because who knows if he would have and a person like I'm assuming your father was, they would never seek help without somebody pushing them, without being mandated, let's say,
yeah,
to go and get some help. So as you say, and how noble of you that to think that you are, well, I don't know, pleased, I don't quite know what the word is, to think that you gave your dad, your father, another 10 years because he got that help.
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't say pleased, but at the same time,
yeah,
I just
that's the
go,
wrong word.
It's just how life pans out, you know, that you know, could I feel guilty about him going to jail? No. But there were also sort of, for want of a bit, an unforeseen benefit in that, you know, he got to live longer and to get treatment that hopefully, you know, as a sick person, hopefully helped him in some way.
Mm. Did you, apart from the victim impact statement, which we'll go into at some point, did you ever go and see your dad or speak to your dad, or did you
about
want
it?
To?
No way.
No, okay.
No.
Okay.
Too uncomfortable.
Traumatized.
Witnessing my sisters, him in bed with my sisters, not, you know, under blankets, but still, like, you know, just no way. Couldn't talk.
Okay. You've spoken a number of times about your sisters, and this is what you and I feel so passionate about, isn't it? That sex abuse, sexual assault, has lifelong ramifications, and it just changes people. And in a way, I understand number one about a sister that has, you know, been in and out of psychiatric hospitals. I mean, in a way, I think, of course, she would be like the trauma that she has not only been through herself, but if you've seen your sisters being abused, I'm thinking they may have seen you abused as well. So, you know, I don't think it doesn't surprise me at all that one of your sisters has ended up, as I say, in and out of psych hospitals. And then the other sister that's had four kids to four fathers, I imagine all she's looking for, like we are all looking for, is just a companion in life, somebody to love, somebody to share your life with. And I suppose your choices are so clouded when you have been through and experienced what you all have.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's interesting what you said. Another thing that you said, that when you went to the police, you didn't have much evidence. And I want to pull you up on that, because as a police person, if somebody came to me like you, and this is what happened with my father, and I have got two other witnesses, that is great evidence. I mean, there'd be lots of arguments about, you know, had you talked about all sorts of legal argument,
yeah,
but that is a great, what would you, evidence-wise, it's...
It's solid. I mean, the police, when they started asking for details, you know, they're trying to work out our memory because it's 30 years later. You know, I remembered lots of details, and I'm sure my sisters remembered lots of details, and I'm sure that there would have been commonality to things we're talking about, which the police would have just, you know, said, yeah. Our father also did us a favor. He was supposed to be reporting to the police on a weekly basis before the court case. And on one of those occasions, he turned up at the police station naked. So as soon as the police told me that, I couldn't help but sort of laugh and just say thank you, because it was a two-year court process where, you know, maybe we were being questioned about our honesty and all that sort of thing. Well, our father, you know, he made it very quickly obvious that he was a sick person.
Yeah, that's pretty obvious. You're right.
Yeah.
You're right. What do you remember about the court process? Like, you gave a statement, and then it took a couple of years for it for you to give you gave evidence?
Yeah, so
it like took, in the witness box.
Yeah, it took two years with the police investigation and the court process. I will say that whilst the police were busy and not necessarily giving us updates, there were support people that came forth as part of the judicial system, whose whole focus was on our emotional well-being and how were we managing, and did we understand the court process? And they were brilliant. They were such lovely people. So,
is that Witness Assistance Service?
Yeah, I think that's the name. Yeah, and also at the end of it, there was also the what's the one where you retribution. What's the one after the? There was an opportunity once he'd been sentenced and gone to jail. There was actually an opportunity to communicate to him for a third via the legal system. So there was that sort of those sort of people coming forward and helping. The police, even though I'd still say they did a brilliant job, you know, 30 years later, to be able to successfully prosecute was a job well done. It required patience, but it was definitely worth it. And it gave me the opportunity to confront him and in a safe environment, with a carefully, you know, a written victim's impact statement where I'd had an opportunity to think through what it is I wanted to say and to communicate that, and to talk about the various ways that sexual abuse had impacted me.
Actually, you did want, I suppose that's a perfect opportunity if you feel comfortable talking about it. You did want to say a couple of things about your victim impact statement and how important it was for you to be able to, as you say, tell your father through the court system, but tell him how his abuse had affected you.
Yeah, thank you. The reason why I want to talk about it is because I want people to understand that sexual abuse does have an impact. And any pedophiles, people out there thinking of being a pedophile, just seek help. Just seek help because it does have an impact. I'll read out some of the points. You know, I'd say my father stole my right to discover my own sexuality, to have a healthy, developed sexuality and healthy relationships with friends and family as a child and as an adult. You know, I didn't get an opportunity to meet, you know, a nice person and get.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Get involved with them and, you know, discover sexuality that way.
In your own time, in your own way.
Yeah. And the sexual abuse made me secretive and shy. And as a sort of an awkward kid, I was then bullied at school and had very few friends. I wet my bed until I was about 16. We all did, all us kids, which, you know, our place smelt like urine, made us feel inadequate than ourselves. It was embarrassing and drove friends away. I've had a negative outlook on life where I experience anxiety, anger or catastrophize or obsess. There was always a concern about whether my father was outside my bedroom door, whether I had my own privacy, you know, and I end up becoming compulsive and get paranoid and become defensive in work environments, for example, where you don't need to really be defensive rather than just trusting people and communicating in a balanced way.
Yeah.
You know, one of the big things is I suffered from righteous indignation and the need to have agency and potency, which I didn't have as a child. And these are words that I've picked up through, you know, counselling over the years. But
I was going to say, what does that mean, Michael? Could you help us there?
Well, there's the righteous indignation and that's, having been treated in a disgusting way as a kid. And then as an adult, if someone treats me badly, like maybe even if they just turn up late for an appointment or something like that, I get upset all too easily and righteous about it. I've done all the right things. I'm here on time. Why aren't you here on time?
Oh, yes.
You
know, okay.
This sort of thing, which ends up impacting jobs and relationships, you know. I end up overreacting around situations, with righteous indignation, I've got every reason to have righteous indignation about having been sexually abused as a kid, but to keep playing that out as an adult is actually counterproductive and damages relationships.
Yeah, but that's the issue that we come back to all the time, Michael, is that it's learned behaviour. You have got these issues because of what happened when you were a child. I don't know how else, you don't grow up thinking like that. Like, that is a direct result, I believe, my own personal opinion. These are what happens to people when they are abused as children. They have all these different issues.
Yeah, it has an impact. And the other thing I mentioned is, like, I need to have agency and potency. So as a child, you don't have any agency. You're not able to influence things that go on in your life if you're being sexually abused or anything like that. And you definitely don't have any potency. You have no power to do anything differently. As I said, I was scared of my father, and so I end up, as an adult, wanting to have agency and potency, and it can be useful. Like in my work, I've been a really good project manager where I'm really concerned about details and getting things done effectively and lots of agency and potency, but also damaging to relationships where, again, I overreact to things rather than maybe being understanding about a situation where a partner's done something that's upset me, that, I want to have my say. I want to have my say with agency and potency. I couldn't have my say as a child, but as an adult, there's times I've insisted on it, and that's hurtful to my partners, there's another impact. And the other thing I'd end up doing is I overreact, but I also exhaust myself trying to show I have value, I was abused and neglected, as other people will be, and then you end up desperately trying to show people you've got value, and if they do something that lets you down, you see that as an example of they don't see your value, and then you speak up against it and make a big issue about the small things. You end up sweating the small stuff.
which I imagine would affect relationships. People would think, oh, Michael's getting angry. I don't want to be around an angry person, or, oh, God, where'd that come from? I can understand that people don't want to be around people like that, do they?
And you can sort of maybe explain yourself in an intimate relationship, but you can't really explain yourself in a work of relationship where that's happening. You can't say, oh, yeah, I was as a child, and, you know, and I don't really want to be making excuses anyways, but, you know, I can definitely see the impacts, and it's taken time for me to, I've had help with counselling, and it's taken time to, try to be who I want to be rather than the results of my childhood abuse. It also affects my sleep. You know, I don't sleep properly. I wake up at the slightest sound. I think as a child I had to be vigilant about whether my father was about to come into my bedroom, or my mother, even when she was emotionally upset about things, she'd burst in the room at 2 o'clock in the morning. But, you know, so I don't sleep well, and that also impacts obviously on quality of life and partners and work and neighbours, and, you know, being anxious means I always need to be doing something rather than just relax, and I end up with irritable bowels and escaping alcohol and, you know, gambling and all these sort of things that I've done over the years, which I can say I've moved forward. You know, I've got help, and I've been fortunate in being able to afford to get help, and, very concerning at the government sort of scale back help for people.
It is very concerning.
This is the sort of areas where you know, people have been abused can need that help when it comes to, you know, their mental health care plans and Medicare rebates, etc.
Isn't that it's interesting that you say that you've had issues with alcohol, issues with gambling. Isn't that interesting that so did your father? Like, a lot of people would think seeing, and this happens all the time, Michael, where you, because you grow up, it's almost like subconsciously it's learned behaviour that you despise, but somehow it draws you into, that's what you resort to, because, I just think that's fascinating. I think people that haven't been in that position would think, why would you use alcohol when you knew what it did to your dad? But it's how your dad coped, so it's how you learn to cope, I suppose. Would I be, sort of right in a roundabout sort of a way?
Or there could be, if you're suffering from things, how do you cope? There's various ways of coping. You can choose healthy ways. I didn't have a role model choosing healthy ways. My role model.
That's my point.
My role model was the alcohol and et cetera. But, I get it. Yeah, and there are other sort of impacts too, which I'd sort of like to talk about.
Please do.
One of the really embarrassing ones is I used to get recurring images in my mind which would shock and shame me. Where I'd get sexual thoughts when I'd see images of starving children on TV, for example, and it's just shocking, you know. And I talked to psychiatrists about it, and they said that's a very understandable psychological reaction. And in fact, since I talked about it, it's no longer happens. It's been years. So definitely sort of talking about it and understanding that that it was just the human way, that sort of reaction was enabled me to sort of just, let go.
Can I interject there, sure. Michael? That's very interesting. Although it's a bit uncomfortable to talk about this, I find it interesting or fascinating. I don't know the word. But what did the psychologist say about those recurring sexual thoughts around you with children? What was the – why did she say or he say that happened? Did they explain that?
Yeah, and just to be clear, I wasn't having thoughts about having sex with children, but just
okay, but right?
I couldn't just you know, you'd see a naked child and your focus becomes oh, they're naked rather than they're starving. You know?
Oh, yeah, right. I understand. So almost
And
sexualized is a bit strong, yeah, but yes, yeah, I get what
it,
you mean.
Yeah, and so it was I think it was more that I can't remember exactly what they said. They said that, you know, as a child I was trying to cope with in the process of being sexually assaulted. I was trying to cope. And as an adult, I'm going back to that sort of way of thinking trying to cope with what's a confronting image of a poor child starving to death, you know. It's your brain gets accustomed to trying to deal with a situation that as a child, thinking sexual way because it's what you're being programmed when as being abused.
You know, that makes a lot of sense because as an investigator of sexual child abuse material, I used to – you've explained something to me there, because I used to look at children not as children. This is after viewing child abuse material for my job. And I used to look at children, certainly not sexualized, but a bit like you, like I'd think, oh, I saw a little girl that looked like that in a particular scenario to do with child abuse. And so I didn't want to look at children because it brought me back to how I had seen them. And what you're saying is that when you see starving children or whatever, it takes you back to you being that age and being abused, yeah? In a way?
When I was a child trying to cope with the fact that, you know, my father's in the middle of sexually assaulting me, sexualized the event and sort of cope. And then, as an adult, see something that's sort of shocking, like a child starving, and trying to brain's trying to cope with what's shocking.
Yes.
That sexualized ends up focusing on this the fact the child's naked, starving to death. I did feel guilty about having sexual responses, a biological response as a child, but you know, I understand we're all just human, right? I have been nervous about having children of my own, and I feel like he stole that right from me. I have learned that a lot of people who sexually assault someone were sexually assaulted themselves, but it doesn't mean that a lot of people who are sexually assaulted will go on to sexually assault someone.
That's a
really important thing to note, and I'm definitely, you know, I'm not ever going to sexually assault anyone. I was nervous about having my own children and feel like he stole that.
Of course you would.
That's another impact. I've also felt awkward about, you know, my friends know about my child. It's not my problem, it's my father's problem, right? But, you know, I do sort of talk about my child with my friends, and I have been conscious, about, you know, where my friends are fearful of me being around their children. And fortunately, that's not the case. I've actually been like an uncle to a lot of my friends' children, babysat and all that.
Isn't that cruel, Michael, that that could almost make me cry to think that.
Yeah, it's horrible.
The abuse that you have had by your father, and it doesn't matter whether it's your father, whatever, but children that are abused have these, like, you have probably avoided having children because it's had such an impact on you, and you never want another child to go through that, you know, like.
Yeah. Yeah.
I
believe my father was sexually assaulted when he was a kid, and in the back of my mind, I sort of take this proud, stupid thought in my head of, well, I'm the last of the bloodline, you know, like it's not going on anymore. And what a sad thing to think, you know, like,
yeah.
you know,
yeah. You're right, but you know what I really admire? There's a lot of things I admire about you, but that to actually be able to say that and share that, that's a very powerful thing for people to hear, Michael, like just your honesty. It's just so, I've got to say, it's really lovely.
Thanks. I don't have anything to hide. You know, the problem was his. As I say, if there's anything I can say that might help others in any way, you know, I'll say it because, if hopefully good can come out of it.
Oh, I have no doubt. I have no doubt. You know, these conversations, and by you sharing this, I think it will help a lot of people. It explains things, and they're difficult to explain, aren't they, and difficult to talk about.
Yeah.
It might give somebody some context, you know, and help them. I've got to go back to your schooling. So with all this going on, Michael, your schooling must have been so distorted. You know, you were bullied because did the people at school know that you were wetting yourself?
I don't know if they knew. They probably did know.
Oh, okay.
I had a birthday once where one friend turned up and he stayed for about 5 minutes and then left. And I'm pretty sure the place was smelt like urine. But my way of coping at school was to excel academically. Whilst I wouldn't have friends, I'd try to prove myself by performing well. And whereas my sisters would drop out of school and run away from home. My brother, he must have been about 13 or 14, and I was 6 years older than him. I actually went to the school counsellor and actually, because I was worried about my brother. I'd left school at that point, so I was going to university, but I actually went back to the school counsellor to talk to them about my brother. I was concerned. I don't remember the details about it, but it affected us in different ways, you know.
Mm-hmm. How old were you when the abuse started?
I was 12.
Gee, that's such a difficult time anyway, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, you know, puberty and all. Like,
that's the earliest I remember. I don't know if it goes back before then and I've got a mental block about it, but, yeah.
Yeah. I wonder why.
Yeah.
So just going back to the impact again, is there anything else in the that you wanted to say about the victim?
There were just a few other things.
Feel free.
Yeah, yep. Thanks. I think, you know, and sometimes I confuse love and sex in relationships. You know, when I think about my childhood being chaotic and you know, my father being violent towards my mother and my brother and otherwise neglecting us, and then my mother being emotionally abusive as well, it finally felt like there was some warmth when I was being sexually assaulted, you know. As an adult, so I can start to confuse love and sex, you know. Getting sexually involved with someone suddenly becomes like, you know, suddenly there's so much more meaning to the relationship. I might stay in a relationship that I shouldn't be in because I'm getting the warmth that I want in a sexual way. Yeah, it's just a bit, it's just weird. Gets twisted. I can end up in dysfunctional relationships with people who are abusive in other ways, and then, you know, we get that vicious circle going where, you know, I've got righteous indignation and want to be, you know, have agency and potency and tell them off when they do wrong by me and they mistreat me. So, you know, it predisposes you to ending up in dysfunctional relationships, and it's important to recognize that, you know, as an adult now. So, you know, and I feel like I need to constantly be seeking approval because I didn't have that as a child. And, you know, in fact, I felt like I was treated like crap. I was used. And so I get hurt easily when I don't receive approval from other people. And at the same time, I don't trust other people, so I'm looking for
people. But why would you? Yeah, you know?
I'm looking for people to actually give me approval, and I don't trust them at the same time. So yeah, good luck with that, you know. So
what a tangled web, hey?
Yeah. These are the things, you know, and you sort of piece it together over the years. You know, I'm in my 50s now, so I've had plenty of time, and I've been fortunate that, you know, I've had times of reasonable income where I've seen counsellors and I've been able to sort things out. And again, you know, I just ask the government to please help people who are less fortunate than me, who have been abused or suffering in, you know, mental health challenges and really need this help with mental health care plan, you know. Don't take that away from society. It should be core to society.
Yeah, you're right, because you did say at some stage there, I think, that you had joined a support group, and just how empowering you found that group. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah.
Like, I can't imagine, let's say, walking in that first time when you walk into this room, you don't know anyone. I cannot imagine the anxiety of walking into that room. But then again, in another way, on the opposite side, to walk into a room where you know that people understand and, you know, probably most of them have been abused in some way, it must also be comforting.
Yeah, it was many years ago, but it was actually a group run out of the – they were using the Royal Prince Alfred Hospital in Sydney as a base to run these groups. I think it was on a monthly basis from memory, and it was for victims of sexual assault, and it was a men's group in specifically.
Okay, yep.
I'm not sure if there's other groups around now. I'm guessing there would be. But it was an opportunity to openly talk about the impacts on me and to hear from others who'd experienced similar. And in fact, I sadly heard from others who'd experienced far worse than what I'd ever imagined. You know, from the age of 4 years old, for example, or even a gentleman in his 50s who was gang raped.
How did you manage hearing those stories? It's interesting that you say, you know, that mine was nothing compared to these, but then, you know, there would be people that would say to be abused by your father doesn't get much worse than that. However, we don't want to grade, you know, somebody's worse than somebody else, but how did you manage hearing those stories? Did that make you feel closer to the group, or I don't know, tell us about that.
Well, the thing was that everyone was there with the best intent, and I think there was some warmth there. Like, you know, we were human beings. We were individuals first and foremost. These past events aren't who we are. It was an opportunity to talk about those past events separately to who we were, and to get to know each other besides those past events. I think it was part of the process was being able to, separate it out and to have no secrets, you know, to just be able to talk openly.
And did that feel good to be able to tell these strangers?
Yeah.
To get it off your chest.
Yeah, get it off your chest, to be able to segment what happened and what someone else did that was wrong from who you are, and to be able to, might sound cliche, but it sort of doesn't matter if you've got baggage as long as it's neatly packed. You know what I mean? It was that sort of process.
It's a nice way. It was a
process of recognizing the baggage and saying, well, that's the baggage bit, and then there's the rest of me, and let's just neatly package that baggage and talk about that and get help with that, coping mechanisms that may not be helpful, for example. I've got help for that. And another really important part was also recognizing I didn't really appreciate the impacts of my mother's emotional abuse. you know, and yeah, she was a refugee from Second World War, et cetera, and she had all her issues, and you know, but you know, it helped me to recognise, you know, that to have things in perspective, you know, which bits of what I'm dealing with relate to my father, and which bits relate to my mother, and you know, what patterns can I try not to repeat, and you know, all those sort of things. So it was,
but it's only as an adult that you probably understand more about why your mum did abuse you emotionally. But as a kid, you wouldn't think like that. Like, it must have been a lonely life. You know, here's your dad sexually abusing you and your mum emotionally abusing you. Where did you go?
I went into Meccano, which is sort of like the metal version of Lego. So I'd spend hours and hours in my bedroom. I was inventive. I got the mechanism from a toaster and turned that into an automatic lock for my bedroom door, so I could lock the door from inside.
Oh, sorry, I laughed, but then that's terrible. Where you were going.
I got a mirror and put it on the windowsill and projected the sun onto the ceiling, and the ceiling became a sundial. And I'd lie in bed and read books. Lonely is the word.
Oh, gee. So where are you at now, Michael? Tell us about your life now.
Yeah, well, nowadays I'm a professional in technology. I like playing music. I love playing music. I've got a group of friends that I enjoy having a jam with on a regular basis.
And what do you play?
I play piano.
Oh, really? Yeah, I love blues. Do you play blues? Because
yeah,
love blues.
Yeah, play a bit of ambient stuff as well. I love Miles Davis, for example.
You know, when I was younger, with my sister, we went over to the States and we went to New Orleans, cool. Or whatever, however they say it. And that was one of the highlights of my life, to go to Preservation Hall and just sit and listen to these masters of, and it wasn't honky tonk, it was blues. I can still see them and I can still hear them. Love it.
Yeah, nice. Yeah.
What about emotionally? How are you?
Emotionally, I'm sort of between relationships at the moment. I sort of don't mind it. I've sort of learnt to enjoy my own company. I guess I need to start going back to the gym after Christmas time. You know, you sort of pause your gym membership while you're on holiday.
Pork up a bit.
Then you pork up a bit and snuck. Got to get back to the gym, and that'll also help balance my emotions as well. I'm a little bit sort of down after, you know, having a wonderful holiday and back at work. You know, but I think going back to the gym is going to help there as well. So I'm actually back off to the gym for the first time tonight.
Well, good on you. Yeah. You know, I know what you mean about just coming back, you know, from holidays, and you think, oh, God, back to the grind. But I do remember in one of our conversations or something I read, and I thought, what a great attitude you've got. You could be feel really sorry for yourself and woe is me, but you are the complete opposite. You know, you see now, you seem to see the good in being alive and enjoying life. You know, I take my hat off to you, Michael.
Yeah, no, thanks.
I really do.
Yeah, no, thank you. I mean, you know, I also like to, you know, I'm not perfect, as I say. I've got my own sort of dysfunctional stuff to sort out when it comes to relationships, things like that.
We've all got that.
I do like to help other people, and I think one of the best things anyone can do in life, one of the greatest rewards you can get from in life, is from helping other people. And you know, and one of the reasons why I reached out to you is I read an article about what you've done, and understanding, having some inkling of the impacts it's had on you in terms of your mental health, the things you've gone through. And just wanted to really thank you, you know, from the bottom of my heart, thank you for what you've done and what you're continuing to do. And I think, you know, I'm hoping that some of the things I've said maybe help other people in other ways, you know. So I appreciate the opportunity, Narelle, and thanks very much.
I know, Michael, that you will have touched a lot of people by what you have said today and your honesty and your warmth. I've just got to say, you know, thank you for just being so brave in sharing your story, because I know the hesitancy initially, but I brought you around, and see, it's all good. It's just so good for other people to hear this, and I know there's going to be people out there who gain confidence, maybe even some motivation or inspiration. And I suppose, you know, to talk to someone, not to hide your pain anymore, and just consider reporting your own abuse to the police because of hearing your honesty and your courage. And I hear time and time again through our interview today, you've talked about you wish you hadn't have taken so long. Well, for somebody out there, don't wait. You know, get in there, go and speak to somebody, get some help, and go to the police. If I've said before, you can go to the police and just get some advice. You don't actually have to give a statement. They can give you all sorts of options.
Yeah.
Anyway, on that note, thank you so much, Michael. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks very much, Noelle.
As you've probably noticed, we've moved to a new platform called Acast. I think that's the right expression, I've got no idea. And my previous reviews haven't transferred over. I need reviews. Could you do me a favour and put up a review? And thank you so much for your support and patronage. With your help, I can give you that little bit extra. Thanks.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.